Welcome to episode 228 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to assemble a Kinex roller coaster. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're talking about simple versus complex games. First, we discuss some games we've played recently: the Holiday Hijinks Groundhog Gambit and Cupid Crisis, Dorf Romantic the Board Game, and Wandering Galaxy, a Crossroads game. Then, we talk about the benefits and downsides of playing both simple and complex board games. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambie
and Crystal.
Before we start the episode, we have an announcement. We have a new merch store. So, a couple of months ago, we had a new TeePublic store, but now we have like a separate merch store through that, but it's like at our domain. So, merch.boardgameblitz.com. You can go there to see
all
of our designs. Yeah. And with that, we have a new design, and by we, I mean my five-year-old son, one of my kids, made another t-shirt design with board game components. It's very mixed media. He like drew a picture, cut out some things and taped them on, and then also put like meeples and cubes on top of it as a mosaic, and it's like skeleton pirates. So if you're interested
in that. It's very niche, but it's adorable.
Yeah. And you can check out our other designs too. He's made a sugar skull mosaic as well. And then we have other designs that have not been made by five-year-olds.
Yeah. And I guess if anybody out there, you know, wants to see more merch and has ideas like for concepts they would love to see us make in our merch store, you know, let us know. Hit us up on social media or in our Discord. And Ambie's always been very talented at just about everything. But like your artistic skills, I feel, have leveled up over the years. And
Well, I used to do art like in high school and stuff, but I just haven't in a long time. And so I have some more time for it now when my kids are in art class. They went to art class. And so like I was like, oh, I can do this while I'm waiting in the car for them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm loving it.
Recently, I played two more Holiday Hijinks games, which we've talked about before. These are 18-card escape room games published by Grand Gamers Guild and designed by Jonathan Schaffer. I played The Groundhog Gambit and The Cupid Crisis, themed around Groundhog's Day and Valentine's Day, respectively.
Which Groundhog's Day will have just passed when this episode comes out. So that's the timing is very nice.
Yeah. And Valentine's Day is
just around the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Groundhog one is a 120-minute mystery for one or more players. And the Valentine's Day one is a 60-minute mystery for one or more players. Usually they're 60 minutes. But yeah, the Groundhog Day one is longer. It has the same number of cards, still 18 cards, but reuses them in interesting ways. So I thought that was really neat. I did have to use some hints on it, but I enjoyed it. And then Cupid Crisis, I enjoyed that one too. I think the Cupid Crisis was more word puzzle focused, and the Groundhog Gambit seemed more like logic, different types of logic puzzles, but both of them have a mixture of puzzles, like all of the Holiday Hijinks do. In the Cupid Crisis, the last puzzle for me actually felt almost like an aha moment. When I play puzzle games, puzzle video games, like an aha moment is like when you go, aha! Like at the end you're like, oh, that's
what happened.
I think
everybody knows what you're talking about, like even though like it's that feeling of you don't figure something out immediately, but you like when you do figure it out, it's a moment and it feels really satisfying. So
the Cupid Crisis, like usually these smaller like puzzle hunt type games, they don't have aha moments for me, but the Cupid Crisis did. It felt almost like one. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, I didn't want to go into spoilers, so those were quick reviews of those. But I did also play...
So have you seen the movie Groundhog's Day?
Yes, I did see it like last year for the first time.
Oh, nice! It is my partner Dan's favorite movie of all time, so... Yeah, I mean, so I had seen it many times before he and I got together, but we've definitely watched it since then as well. Mm-hmm. And there were definitely nods to the movie in the game.
Yep. I also wanted to talk about Dorf Romantic, the board game, which I played just one play. So Dorf Romantic, the board game, is based on the video game, which is like a board gamey tile-laying video game. But this is designed by Michael Palm and Lucas Zock and published by Pegasus Spiel in 2022. This is a cooperative tile-laying game. You have little hex tiles with different features on them, like a village or a forest, or there's a river and a railroad track, and you have to like place them next to other hexes, and you want to line up the railroad tracks. You have to line up the railroad tracks and line up the rivers, but other features don't have to be connected, but you kind of want them to sometimes because you're trying to fulfill these tasks. So each time you have to have three tasks at a time, and you flip over a task tile, it'll say like the feature that the tile has, and you flip over, it is a number of 4, 5, or 6. So you want that many of that feature connected. And so when you have exactly that many connected in that region, then you get to complete the task. And so you're trying to get through all of the tasks. And then you also get points for how long your longest railroad and longest river are. It's also a campaign, or like a you unlock things. So kind of campaign game with like achievements and stuff, which kind of feels video gamey because it is based on a video game. But like after we play the game, you get points for like how well you do it, and you get to mark off little check boxes on this campaign sheet, and then you open a box when you get to that part, and there's like branches of the tech tree, so you open box and you get new tiles and get new achievements that you can get. And so it's like if you get this score or something, then you get an achievement. So that's kind of cute. We only played one game though, but yeah, it felt like a very casual, chill solo slash co-op game. There's no hidden information, so it's just like on your turn you flip over the next tile and then place it, and everyone can like cooperate. So it's like a solo game played cooperatively, kind of. It's 1 to 6 players. We played 3 players, which was fine. As long as there's no like quarterbacker or something, then you can play cooperatively. It depends on your group and what you know.
It is interesting that they specified that the player count is 1 to 6. Like that. Yeah, seems, I don't. It seems like a lot, I guess, for what is a relatively simple, chill game, right? Like,
yeah,
but if maybe I have 6 like friends, I'm probably not going to pull out Dwarf Romantic.
But the target audience probably isn't like board gamers, maybe, yeah, because it comes from video games. So if you have like a group of 6 video gamers or like people who don't play board games together, they would be playing like a party game, or like they could play this together as well as a nice like activity while they're also hanging out or something. So yeah, it's like a chill game. For me, it was just like, it was fine and like I enjoyed it, but it's not something that's like exciting or anything for me. Like, it was a nice, casual, chill, cooperative game, and I enjoyed it. It's not something that I would like ask to play or like bring specifically to play, but I'll play it if people want to. So that's
did you play the video game rating?
I played like the demo or something, but I don't like board gamey video games.
Okay.
So yeah, I never got into it. And also like those types of puzzle games, I'm not as into. I want like more progression in my video games. So
yeah, there was a moment, I think it was during the pandemic, when Dwarf Romantic came out, and like it felt like everybody in the online board game community was playing it all of a sudden, because basically everybody said, they were like, oh, this is a video game that's a board game. Basically. And I do have to, I wonder what the process of taking it from a video game to an actual board game was. I'm imagining in my head that the people who made the video game heard all the chatter online about all the board gamers going, this is a great board game, and they went, oh, should we make this into a board game? Like, that's the way I'm imagining it happening. I'm guessing they did not have plans for a physical board game at first, but then they realized they created a good idea for a board game. So it usually goes the other way around, I feel. But I played the video game, but I have not played the board game version. I will say the video game, definitely chill, lovely experience, unless you're trying to go for crazy high scores.
So the adaptation seems good. Like, it has a similar feel, I think, even though I never like got into the video game.
Yeah. Well, the game I'm talking about today is also one that I am kind of more or less giving first impressions about, because I've only played one game of it so far, and that is Wandering Galaxy, a Crossroads game. So this is the new Crossroads game from Plaid Hat Games, designed by Jerry Hawthorne. You all are probably very familiar with the fact that I love most of the stuff that Plaid Hat Games comes out with, and especially their Crossroads games, which over time have just gotten better and better and better generally. Like, it feels like there are some board game publishers who find a winning idea for like a type of board game and then they kind of like hammer it to death, and by the end like by the end of the series you're like, I don't need 800 versions of Azul. No hate to Azul. I really like Azul and some of its versions. But with the Crossroads series, the very first one, Dead of Winter, came out so long ago now. And the series has really grown and changed and evolved. It hasn't stayed stagnant, and the way Crossroads work within their games has changed. So this is closest to their more recent games, Forgotten Waters and Freelancers, which both of which I've talked about on the show previously. Freelancers was my favorite game of 2023. And I would not be surprised if Wandering Galaxy ends up near the top of my list for 2024. Obviously, having only played one game of it so far, I cannot definitively say that. But where Freelancers was a one-off game, Wandering Galaxy, while you do have the ability to play one-off games, it also has a campaign. And so you get to create characters that grow and change from game to game. It also adds in some mechanics that the previous Crossroads games did not have. Similarly to other games in this series, you are a group of people who are tasked with doing things together. And in this instance, you're a group of spacers who are going to be going around the galaxy, completing jobs and trying to earn money to pay off your ship, basically. The way you do that is similar to the two games prior that I mentioned, where you go to a location and you have a book of destinations that you're going to be flipping pages in, and then there are actions listed in the book that you can take during a given round, and then often something on the other side that kind of depicts where you're at. But they've started using the book for some more other creative purposes, including like mini maps and things of that nature. And they have implemented a skill deck in this game, which is new. There is a deck building element where all of the characters have their own deck of skill cards. And when you do a skill check in this game, you're flipping cards over from your deck and looking for the right icons for that particular skill check. And as the games progress, you get to add and remove cards from your deck to make it better, like any deck building game. So it's a little more customizable in that way, and you will get to improve and grow throughout the experience, which I think is a really neat addition. Similarly to the other two games, it also has some humor in it. It uses a web app to facilitate the game, and there is voice acting, which is done really well, and there's a lot of humor in how the writing is completed. It is not as crass as Freelancers was. Freelancers was, I would say, you don't want to play with children. This one, so far, would be probably okay to play with kiddos. It does say age 14 plus, though, so there might be content coming that is a little more adult in nature that I haven't run into yet. But yeah, like, this game is a mash of so many mechanisms, and yet it works. Like, there's real time, there's worker placement, there's deck building, there's pick up and deliver, there's, oh my gosh, I know I'm missing things. Like, it is so many different things all at once, and yet it works. And I don't know, I just, this series is, it's something I really enjoy. So, like I said, I've only played the first game of the campaign so far, but it's going really well. You look like you want to say something.
No, I mean, I'm glad that the series is still good and getting, because like I still have only played Dead of Winter and then like one partial game of Gen 7, and Gen 7 was not...
Yeah, Gen 7, what's funny, I actually own Gen 7, but I've never played it. Mm-hmm. I will admit that when it came out and the reviews were not great, I didn't pick it up. But then I was buying games online at one point, and it was like heavily discounted on some site. I think I got it for like, it was like a small enough amount that I think I would be embarrassed to say how much I purchased that game for. And I have not played it yet, but I the price was so low that I was like, I have to do it. Even if I only open the box and look through everything, it'll be worth it.
Use the components for something else.
The idea of Gen 7 was fascinating to me. And I'm sad that whatever the experience ended up being didn't quite nail it, yeah. I guess, for most people. But yeah,
part
the
of
idea
it, I
that
think
you're
was
on...
the rule book was not good. I think.
That actually brings up something interesting because these games, because there's a lot going on, they can be a little bit weird to learn. But for this game, at least in particular, you do not have to read the rule book at all to start playing. You can go onto the web app and there is a full tutorial. It will guide you through the setup entirely and it will teach you how to play as you start playing the first scenario.
Oh, that's neat. That's the cool thing about like app-assisted games. Like you can just have tutorials in there.
And it was a really good tutorial too. Like I think there are probably some little nuances and rules that it wasn't able to get into. And it did specify that once we finished the tutorial. It was like, here's a couple other things that you're going to need to know. And obviously I'm probably going to be looking through the rule book for other stuff that hasn't come up yet. But it got us going right away. It helped us set it up on the table and just start playing. So I think that makes it a lot more accessible, especially to people who might be more intimidated about a larger game like this. I loved that experience with the tutorial. It worked really well. So kudos on them for that, at least. So yeah, that was Wandering Galaxy, a Crossroads game. You will probably hear me talk about it again about a year from now, if I had to guess, but it's 2024, so it'd be the Blitzies will be doing... I would have to play it.
Month-ish?
Oh, no. I don't know if I'm going to be able to play it enough to get it in the 2024 Blitzies. Oh, no. Because it just came out in December.
Yeah.
Like, barely. Hard. Plaid Hat, why have you done this to me? We'll see what I'm able to make happen there, I guess. If there is one thing that I think could have been a way that we would have defined the members of this podcast when we first started it, not knowing a lot about each other, I would say the complexity of the games that we liked differed to some degree.
Also, like, the types.
The types, too, for sure. I was definitely...
Like, you were, like, the thematic...
Thematic games, medium
Cassidy
weight.
Did Euro games.
But she also liked the lighter stuff, too, because she liked a lot of the little card games, right?
Maybe. She hated dice.
She did hate dice. shout out to Cassidy. We miss you. And then you were... Yeah. You had not learned 18XX games yet.
No,
but
I learned
you did
that
like heavy Euros.
I liked heavy Euros. But my first game that I talked about was also Ghost Blitz, so which is not a heavy game.
That is about as simple as it gets.
Yeah, I like heavy Euros or super simple games.
Well, and that is a really good lead-in to our discussion today, which is simple games versus complex games, because I do think there are people within the board gaming community who will try and gatekeep to some degree and argue that games of a certain simplicity are inherently worse than other games or don't have as much value. And obviously we are not those people, but I kind of wanted to have a discussion about where simple games and complex games both can live and where what the benefits and downsides of both of those categories are.
Yeah, they're both. I mean, I don't play a lot in the middle tier anymore. I don't play a lot of complex games anymore now too because of time. So complex games can be like really good. Like when I used to play heavy Euros, they would be complex. They would be thematic too, like Tal Lacerda games. They're very complex because they go with the theme and like you have little rules to go with the theme and make it really thematic. But then it's also good mechanics and stuff. So it's very complex, just like all the little steps you have to do. And I like all of that building and stuff, but they take longer to set up, longer to learn. And so if you don't have the time to play a longer game, it's hard to get those played. And so simple games are good for when you don't have the time or energy to play a complex game, and they can still be a lot of fun for a shorter time.
Yeah, time absolutely is a luxury, and not everyone has it available. I think the rise in online versions of board games has potentially helped with that a little bit. Sometimes it's easier to learn a game in an online format where the rules are enforced because it basically prevents you from messing up.
Yeah. And like if you have to count score at the end, it helps with that. You don't have to set up.
Yes. That's a like, lot of... I'm in the middle of a game of Bunny Kingdom on Board Game Arena right now, and I hadn't played Bunny Kingdom in years because while it is fun, it's annoying to have to do that much multiplication throughout the whole game. I don't like math. I was good at math when I was young, but I don't want to do math when I play board games. That's not what I'm here for. And so it's lovely playing it online because it does all that work for you.
Also, we play with a lot of different types of people. So with people who aren't used to playing a lot of complex games, you're not going to bring out like an 18xx game for the first game. You're being like, oh, do you want to know about board games? Like,
watch all of their eyes glaze over.
So yeah, like I think that's another reason we got into, like, we were into like super heavy games, but then also super simple party games and stuff, because they're great for playing with all types of people. Like The Mind, which I love a lot. I've played with so many different people, like everyone I know. It's so easy to get played, and sometimes also people don't want like a, it depends on what you want at that time. Like, you're not looking for a heavy thinking experience. You want to just maybe hang out with friends and just have something to do or something. Like, so simple games are good for like people want different things at different times.
That's really a good point, because if you ask the question to anybody who plays board games, like, why do you play board games, you will get a variety of different answers. And even from the same person, you could get multiple answers, right? Like, for me personally, I play board games because I find them to be fun, because I think they stretch my brain in interesting ways and keep it pliable, which as I get older will become more important. It allows me to spend time with people that I care about. It allows me to meet new people that I don't know in certain situations. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find people who, if asked, why do you play board games, the only answer would be to win board games. Like, I don't think... I'm sure that guy does exist. He probably exists somewhere, but, like, we don't... That dude is not the norm. And that to me is why both simple and complex games have merit, and why people who dismiss simple games outright are really doing themselves a disservice, because of all of the different things that you as a person can get out of a board gaming experience.
It is hard to compare them, though.
That's the thing. It is, right? Like, you and I have both made top 100 lists, and we've used PubMeeple. Mm-hmm. Shout out to PubMeeple. They have a rankings engine on their website that you can use to rank your board games. And when you are looking at something like The Mind versus maybe Kanban, I know you don't play Kanban as much anymore, but let's, you know, you like both those games.
Yeah.
It's hard directly compare them, because they are situational and you do potentially use them for slightly different reasons. And so to say one is better than the other doesn't really make sense. But I guess that's why in a top 100, it isn't this is better than the other. It's I like this more than the other. And
that's also hard. Like,
because
it's like depends on my mood that day.
Right.
That's why it's hard for me to rank games or like rate games, too. Like, I don't know. It depends how I'm feeling, if this is game is an 8 or a 9.
I like on Board Game Geek the word descriptions that they use alongside.
Yeah, I try to use that. Yeah, but it's like, help. Oh, I want to play this all the time. I'm like, there's no game that I want to play all the time, because sometimes I just want to sleep.
Well, okay, but that's not... I think they mean like anytime you sat down to play board games, if that game hit the table, you'd be happy about it.
I take it too literally.
Yeah, a little bit. Because like, they're not expecting you to learn how to play board games in your sleep. But yeah, like the difference between... I'm looking at Board Game Geek right now, and like a 5-star rating out of 10 is mediocre. Take it or leave it. For me, if I rated a game a 5, that means I really probably don't like it very much. Like, a 5 doesn't feel good enough for a game that I like, but then 6 is, okay, we'll play it if in the mood. It's hard for me to think of games that fall into that category where I don't like them but would be willing to play them situationally. There probably are.
Well, it's like a game that you would play if your friend wanted to, right? Like, is there
that's true.
Games that's like, I feel like there are games like that for me.
You know what? That's true. There's some really good board games that just, in my plays of them, haven't struck me as strongly. but my friends mm-hmm. enjoy them, so I would totally sit down and play them again. I think Obsession is probably a good example of that. I know a lot of people really love Obsession, and I didn't mm-hmm. dislike it, but nothing about it really grabbed me and made me want to play it again. But Kathy loves Obsession, so if she came over with it and wanted to play, I'd play it in a heartbeat. Like, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she's packing it up and coming over to my house right now as she listens to this. But yeah, I mean, rankings and ratings are all subjective and arbitrary, mm-hmm. right? They mean things until they don't, and then it's... The meaning is only what you prescribe to it, and if you don't attach meaning to something, then it doesn't really matter. But mm-hmm. I do think that gamers who are more open-minded about the types of gaming experiences that they're willing to potentially have are likely to have more opportunities come their way. It doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. mean that they're better or that their game sessions are significantly improved over other people. People, because there are people who are like, I'm a career, you know, Star Wars X-Wing player, and that is all I play, and that is all I want. Yeah, and that's if fine. That's what somebody wants to do, that's totally fine. There's no, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think that there is value in being willing to go outside of the things that you are most familiar with and most comfortable with. And sometimes you'll explore and you'll go, oh no, I want to go back in my cozy cave. And then that's that.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, BoardGameBlitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Mark February 25th on your calendar now, because that's when Champions of Midgard's 10th Anniversary Collector's Edition is coming to Kickstarter. And as always, Blitzketeers get a special offer when shopping at GrayFoxGames.com. Use the code BLITZ10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire cart, including exclusives. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, but she found me in the ballroom.
It wasn't me.
Saw me carrying the lead pipe.
It wasn't me.
I even found a secret passage.
It wasn't me.
How did she catch me in the study?
It wasn't me.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. You know, the meaning is what you prescribe it to.
Prescribe to it.
Yes.